All right. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On tonight's show, I have a very special guest. Her name is Cynthia Hodges, and she just published a book that is a very important book, timely book. And the name of that book or title of that book is Den of Vipers, Central Banks and the Fake Economy. But she's also written other books. I interviewed her under her pseudonym, Tina Foster, about Paul McCartney or Fall McCartney. And so that is a whole nother story about false identities. And she's written another book about people who've been exchanged. I can't remember the title of it offhand, but we're going to talk about Den of Vipers. So Cynthia Hodges, are you there?
I sure am. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for agreeing to the interview. For people who may not have heard of your background, can you talk a little bit about yourself and what led you to write this book, Den of Vipers, Central Banks and the Fake Economy?
Sure. Well, I have a master's in Germanic studies. I have two law degrees, a JD and an LLM, and I am a licensed attorney in Washington State. I started researching gold and silver and the economy probably in 2010 and started investing in 2013. I started a company and I trade stocks and options and also invest in gold and silver. So Den of Vipers is basically about a decade worth of research and experience. And I thought it was a necessary book to write because the banksters try to obfuscate their dealings. And a lot of people, although everybody is affected by this monetary policy, a lot of people don't really know or care. And part of that is because the bankers try to make it seem really complicated when it's really not that complicated. So I just don't like to see people fall for these machinations. And we can see now, with the inflation, everybody's talking about the inflation, but it's a perfectly predictable outcome of the Federal Reserve's monetary policies.
Yeah, fiat currency.
Yes, but see, they have this 2% inflation goal, which, if you think about it, 2% of inflation every year that you're devaluing the dollar, then eventually that's going to go to zero, you see.
Right. Well, it has over the last 100 years, right? The value of the dollar has declined
incredibly. Since the Federal Reserve started at the end of 1913, the dollar's purchasing power has fallen over 2,000%. So back then in like 1914, what it took $1 to buy now it takes over $27 to buy.
Right. So maybe that's a good start. Maybe we could go back to the history of the American banking system leading up to the Federal Reserve and then talk about the Federal Reserve. How does that sound?
That sounds good. Well, we've had three central banks in America. And the first was the First National Bank of the United States. And there was a big controversy in the beginning because Alexander Hamilton, who may or may not have been a Rothschild agent, he wanted a central bank based on the Bank of England. And Thomas Jefferson, who was the Secretary of State, was wholly against a central bank and did not think it was constitutional because he thought that the Congress lacked the power to create a national corporation. So Hamilton said, oh no, we have this in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, there's this necessary and proper clause, and basically the U.S. government can do whatever it wants, right?
Right, but isn't it in the Constitution that the Bank of the United States is owned by the people of the United States? There's a countervailing constitutional statement in there, isn't there? Maybe I'm wrong.
No. Not in the Constitution.
Not in the Constitution.
Maybe you're thinking of the Federal Reserve Act or
National Bank. I got to go back and look. I'm rusty, but.
Jefferson and Madison were both against the central bank and could predict what was going to happen with the bankers getting so much control. So, of course, Hamilton won out and the first central bank was created. And it did cause problems, and it only had a 20-year charter, so it was ended. And then the second bank of the United States was started just a couple of years after that. And again, it caused problems, and it actually caused a recession because it lent out too much money, and then it retracted that money. So basically how the banks create money is they lend it, and that's an easy money policy. So they want to, they basically create inflation. And so then when they withdraw the money back out of the economy by raising interest rates or not, calling in the loans. And so then, so they did that and they caused a recession. Well, Andrew Jackson, when he was president, the Second Bank of the United States, its charter was going to run out, but they basically forced his hand, and he took on the Second Bank, and he took the money out of he took the U.S. government money out of the Second Bank, and he put it into these state banks. And started a war with this guy, Nicholas Biddle, who was the third president of the Second Bank of the United States. And Jackson, an assailant actually tried to shoot him at the Capitol. And miraculously, both of his pistols misfired and basically just angered Jackson, who beat him over the head with his cane. And later, Jackson did say that he thought that the Rothschilds were behind that assassination attempt. But basically, Jackson was able to kill the bank, and public opinion turned against the central bank. And so its charter was not renewed when it came up.
Right. He's famously kind of said, "I killed the bank," or he wouldn't let it happen over his dead body, right?
Yes, that was his greatest achievement on his deathbed. He said that. So then, of course, the central bankers never gave up on their dream of a central bank for America. So, in 1910, Nelson Aldrich and his crew, they went to Jekyll Island to discuss creating the Federal Reserve. And of course, they were able to sneak it in Congress. So it was like December 22nd of 1913, when most of the senators and congressmen had already left for Christmas, that they passed this Glass-Owens Act that created
this. December 22nd, 1913. So it's right there over the holiday period.
Right. So but it was only three states that actually, there was a question about if enough people actually voted for this thing. But so they got this bill passed. It was the Federal Reserve Act and created the IRS. And so anyway, so they got the Federal Reserve in there, which is it's a central bank. It's privately owned. It's quasi-governmental in that the president does appoint the chairman, but there's no government oversight at all. They're not elected, so the people, they're not beholden to the people. You can't vote them out.
Right, they're shareholders of the bank, just like any other corporation. They're individual parties. They're not members of the United States. They're individual shareholders. And if you look at those shareholders, it's like a who's who of oligarchs and the wealthy people, really, the aristocrats. Not all American either, right?
No, a lot of foreign influence. So Bank of England, Rothschild people. So these people are controlling American monetary policy. Congress can barely get an audit. There was one watered down audit by the GAO, the Government Accountability Office.
And that was kind of an issue. Sorry to interrupt, but that was kind of an issue of Rand Paul, right? Of the Pauls wanted to get an audit of that, but right, that never happened.
Ron Paul had been pushing to audit the Fed for a long time, and that he was never able to get his full audit. But Bernie Sanders apparently passed, he attached an amendment to some bill, I forget which one, but it did call for this audit. And it was after the economic crisis of 2007 and 2008.
Right.
And they wanted to find out where all these billions of dollars had gone.
Trillions, yeah.
Trillions of dollars. Right. What? How much? It was 28 trillion, maybe?
28. Yeah. You know, give or take a trillion, right?
Right.
It was a manufactured crisis, too. You want to talk about the problem with that. But a lot of people think that just happened randomly.
Oh, no.
They pumped and dumped the entire economy. Sorry.
Well, but just getting back to the audit, they wanted to know where all that money had gone, and it had ended up going to a lot of foreign banks. But the Fed, Ben Bernanke, when he was the Fed chairman before Janet Yellen and, you know, Jerome Powell now, but he was actually sitting in front of Congress, and he just outright refused to tell Congress where the money had gone. Wow. It's outrageous.
Right, and it's the taxpayers' money, right? Ultimately, that debt is paying out, the corporations are paying out, or the U.S. government tax revenues are paying off the debts and financing that debt that they created, right?
Right, it's a pretty nice scam they have going, because the Federal Reserve has basically usurped the government's issuance of money, which the Constitution says they can issue gold and silver coin, basically.
Okay, so that's what I remember from the Constitution.
Right. Gold and silver coin, that's constitutional money. So what they're doing now with the paper is, in my opinion, not constitutional, and I do talk about that in the book. But so they've taken that power. They buy the treasury bonds. And that's how they transfer the fake, phony money, right? They just create this money. It's digital, numbers on a ledger.
Right. No, it's incredible.
and they give it to the government to then go and spend however it wants on these social programs. And so then we have to pay the federal income tax, because the Federal Reserve is charging interest on this fake money it's giving to the government.
I know, it's the greatest scam ever, yeah.
It's a huge scam. And the gold, everybody talks about the gold at Fort Knox. Well, the Reagan Grace Commission in 1984 found that the U.S. government doesn't actually hold the gold. The Federal Reserve is holding it as collateral for the loan that the government owes it.
Right. It's just an incredible scam. And Woodrow Wilson said it was the biggest mistake he made. He was actually kind of a buffoon, I think. And he might have been poisoned, that his stroke was actually somebody poisoning him after the whole thing went through. Right. So after the Federal Reserve Act or whatever, the Glass-Owen Act. Mm-hmm. But and a lot of people got poisoned and died mysteriously all through time. And mm-hmm. It's a real issue. It's been a huge issue for the United States. And then, I mean, it used to be based upon a gold standard, and then Tricky Dick got rid of it, right? What, 1971, is that right?
1971, yes.
Yeah.
So the gold standard, the reason why the governments don't like it is it because it constrains deficit spending, right? So when you have, a pot of gold, and they all have loaned out more money, fractional reserve lending, right? So it used to be 20% you'd have to hold in reserve, and then it was 10%. Now it's 0%. But before, on the gold standard, it wouldn't let them just spend however many dollars or create however many dollars they wanted. They actually had to have some gold. And then they could, it's fractional reserve lending. But it does limit, and they don't like that.
Right.
And so then they get rid of the gold standard, but it's really a problem for people because if it's purely fiat paper currency with no gold backing or silver, then it just constantly loses value. So if you're a saver, you are losing every day. You're losing, and they do lie about the rate of inflation.
They're lying about the one right now. There's no doubt about it.
Yes, and I talk about that in the book too, about how they used to have the CPI that was based on a cost of goods. Okay,
so a consumer price index, right?
Right. So it would basically compare the price of light goods. Now they're on a cost of living increase, right? So CPIU, which allows for substitution. So for example, before, if you were eating steak, they would say, okay, steak used to be such and such, and now it's such and such. Well, now they say steak used to be such and such, but now hamburger is such and such, and there's not as big of an increase because you can substitute hamburger for steak.
Right. So they do little tricks to kind of show that.
Yeah. And another trick they do is they don't count heat energy. They don't count medicine. They don't count, you know, food. They count things like refrigerators or computers that go down in price as the technology improves. And so the inflation, which I think they're admitting is 5% now.
That's what they're stating, right? It's probably going to be 10% per annum this year.
It's probably 12%, actually.
12%, yeah,
so John Williams of Shadow Stats, he runs the numbers based on what the CPI used to be. And he's saying that they will underestimate by about 7%. So I would think it's probably at least 12% because people are noticing it. They're talking about it.
Right.
When you go to the grocery store, or if you're doing home repairs, which I'm doing, and you know, the wood, the plywood is up like 100%, or you know, it's twice as expensive from last year.
Right. It's incredible. Yeah.
It is.
So your buying power is decreasing. Prices are going up. It's not a good situation. I mean, it's really a fake economy. I mean, especially when they're just pumping massive amounts, trillions of dollars into the economy. We're in a situation that is really incredible. I mean, it's really, I don't know if it's really anything that's ever happened in our past. So this COVID event helped do a transfer of wealth, but also diminish the savings of every American. Every American should be concerned. Terrified, really.
Oh, yes. And you can see that now that the Biden regime is in, they want to have this massive tax hike, which I think goes back to their modern monetary theory ways, which is basically they think that the government can issue as much dollars as it wants to pay off its debt. And it's kind of what Abraham Lincoln did in the Civil War with the greenbacks, so just issuing these treasury paper money. And the good thing was that it did not pay interest to a central bank, but it did inflate the dollar. So, and that's what MMT does, is it causes inflation. But these proponents think that the government can control inflation by raising taxes. And I think that's what this big Biden tax hike is about.
Wow.
And that was one other point I was going to make about that.
Well, I mean, we can go through this Biden administration is incredible, but the whole pump and dump from 2001 to 2008 was really incredible. Those events were off the charts. So it was actually kind of triggered by monetary policy earlier, right? 2000, yes. And then lax regulation and all that stuff was really just, no, it was a fake economy. That whole economy is fake under Bush.
It is.
Yeah.
So in 2001, Alan Greenspan was chairman of the Fed, and they had just had the stock market bubble burst. And so Greenspan lowered the interest rate down to 1%. And they left it there for several years. And they think that's what caused the real estate housing bubble, right? So when interest rates are low, it is putting money into the economy, right? Because it's easy to borrow money. So it inflates the number of dollars. And so when you don't have an increase in goods and services, then those dollars, in the beginning, they usually go into real estate and the stock market. Because people are looking for yield. They're looking for return. Excuse me. Because when it's sitting in a bank and you're just getting 1% for it sitting there, then you can't make any money. So you know, you want to make at least a return that's equal to the inflation rate. So right now you'd have to make 12%, which is pretty hard.
Which is almost very difficult.
So a lot of that money did flood into the real estate market, and then, you know, it had the real estate. It's the bubble burst there too.
Yeah, it was a huge bubble, but I think it was planned. I think that the Bush economy, they knew what they were doing. They lowered everything low, encouraged the inflation, deregulated, the inevitable was going to happen.
Well, yes, you're right, because the government, because it has such a huge deficit now, it has a huge debt that it's carrying, right? It's $28.5 trillion almost, and so it's never going to be able to pay that back. So I think it's trying to inflate that away. So, you know, if you devalue the dollar, then your debt is less. And so I think that another problem that we're going to face is negative interest rates, because they want to
they're going to have to pull back, right?
They want to have negative interest rates so they can devalue the dollar more, inflate more. And that, I think that's what the cashless agenda is about. Because if you force everybody onto digital money, everything is digital, no cash, then they can charge you whatever they want to have your money in the bank. And if you can just take it out in cash, then who's going to have a bank account? Right? Why are you going to pay to keep your money in the bank if you don't have to? So cash acts as a floor to the interest rate. Like, zero is the floor. That didn't even, you know, well, studies apparently show that people will pay up to 1% negative interest rate before they take the money out of the bank. But I mean, I wouldn't pay it. I wouldn't pay, like, you know, one penny, but.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, what's led to this is this cumulative changes in regulation that go back from the Federal Reserve through leaving the gold standard. And why do you think the American people have passively accepted this over generations and devalued their own currency?
Well, sadly, there's been a dumbing down agenda. People are not taught this stuff.
Not in high school. This is never taught any of this kind of economic.
And even if you do learn economics, you're probably going to be taught Keynesian, not Austrian school. So Austrian school is very much, you know, gold and silver, or at least gold standard, and protecting savings, not inflating the currency away. Free market. It's free market. See, we have a very controlled economy right now. And like when for example, the repo market in 2019, okay, the repurchase, it's when the banks lend to each other, okay, but normally it's like 2%, that it suddenly shot up to like 10% September 2019. And everybody's like, whoa, what's going on here? Somebody's seeing a lot of risk in the market, but the Fed jumped in and like forced it back down. And it's like, but see, the free market was attempting to adjust for the risk, right? You pay more for more risk. And the Federal Reserve does not allow really for the market to function like it's supposed to, free market. But see, there are other problems with this command and control economy, because just like when prices rise and is attempting to balance the excess number of dollars for the goods. But when they implement price controls on things, then it sends the wrong signal to producers, right? It's not saying make more product.
Right.
So that's why you saw in the Soviet Union people standing in line for toilet paper or bread or whatever, because they had price controls. They didn't allow a free market to function, and there were shortages. And we had that too before the revolution or during the revolution with the Continental, right? So America did experiment with the fiat currency of the Continental, and it collapsed because it wasn't backed by anything. And they issued way too many, more than the economy actually could support. But then they tried to implement the price controls on the goods, and it basically caused people to starve because there were no goods. Nobody was producing anything. So that's where I'm afraid where we're headed again, because people are not learning history. They're not studying economics. I mean, it's...
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And you're right. It's not really, it's a command and control thing. They have the plunge protection team to prop up the stock market from panics. There's all kinds of manipulation that really isn't even behind the scenes. They just, people know if the people get skittish and start pulling money out of the stock market, the Federal Reserve just invents money and starts pumping it in there. And you can see really in COVID is a perfect example, because Congress just went along and dropped like $4 trillion or $5 trillion in there to make prop up everybody's money. So it was really just a wealth transference to the rich, at least one. So the peasants got, you know, a check here and there, but the rich got maintained. Really, if they didn't do it, though, I would just assume that the whole country would implode. So I don't know if they really had a choice, but you can see that just another example of really how the real centralized banking controls everything.
Yeah, and so the Federal Reserve, I mean, it is, when you were talking about the stock market, it's called the Fed put, right? So people that are trading, they know that the Fed won't allow the market to fall below a certain amount. So you're kind of safe going into the stock market.
Right, you're safe because you're backed. Yeah, you're backed up by the Fed.
You're backed up. It's the Fed.
It's just a great. It's for people who are sophisticated enough to have money in the stock market. They're okay. It's like a secured deposit at a bank or something.
That's right. Yeah, so, what was I going to say right before that?
But I mean, yeah. Well, go ahead. It's just incredible. It's a fake economy and it's rigged. It's centralized. And if you have the political power, you can pump and dump. And the availability of funds and adjust the market. So I mean, even in the Bush thing, they increased the level of money, then it contracted, and then the Bush guys at BlackRock came in and bought all the houses. And actually, it was the head of the Treasury under Trump was one of the guys who was one of the jackals or parasites who came in and bought a bunch of houses. He actually bought a portfolio from one of the banks. Do you remember his name? Who was the
I don't.
Treasury and Secretary. Mnuchin.
Steve Mnuchin, yeah.
Right, so it is
rigged. And the Federal Reserve only has two tools at its disposal, right? Lower interest rates or raise interest rates. That's it. And so, you know, they talked about quantitative easing, and that's basically flooding the economy with easy money.
Right.
And so they started that in 2008. So they basically had four rounds of quantitative easing, and they dumped trillions of dollars into the economy. Then when they tried to tighten, right, the quantitative tightening, you could see, and they started to try to raise interest rates. You could see the stock market starting to go down because, of course, if you put a lot of extra dollars into the economy, a lot of those dollars are going to end up in the stock market and in real estate. You know, before the inflation finds its way into consumer goods, a lot of that extra money will go into the markets. So of course the stock market's going to go down. I mean, it's a correlation, right? Like, right.
Yeah.
And so then they quickly pivoted, the Powell pivot, right? Stopped the quantitative tightening, went back to quantitative easing, went down to 0%. I think they're at 0.25 right now. And they're going to stay there till 2022. Basically, they can't really ever tighten without causing a depression, a recession, because, I mean, that's what happened with the Great Depression. The Federal Reserve created it, caused the Great Depression. Ben Bernanke admitted that the Federal Reserve caused it, because what they had done was, in the Roaring Twenties, they flooded it with at least 62% more money. Okay, more cash. It's not really technically money, but more cash through loans, through easy lending, and of course a lot of it went into the stock market. You know, drove the stock market up. Then they started to tighten. So, in, you know, starting in 27, whatever it was, they started to raise the interest rates, and then they purposely caused the stock market to crash. You know, some people say, right, as a way to transfer wealth.
Right.
Because apparently Joe Kennedy knew, and he warned somebody, like, sell all your stocks now, don't ask questions.
Right.
So they knew. And what they did, you know, they contracted the money supply, right? So that's why they had the Great Depression. They reduced it by a third. They took a third of the money out of the economy. So, of course, people, they can't pay their loans. There's just, you know.
Right, so they get suicides, and then things get sold for nothing. And the guys who got out early are then the buyers later. So Kennedy maintains his family wealth.
By buying gold.
Right. So
they went into gold, yeah.
Right, and they're still seeing it today. So people are, you know, trying to get into gold, silver, hard commodities. And that's really kind of a theme all the way back to the founding of the country is keeping, and they knew, Jefferson knew, Lincoln understood it. So these guys were at least economically astute enough to know that these items are stable in their value.
But yeah, gold and silver, it's been money for thousands of years. It doesn't deteriorate. It doesn't go to zero. You know, if you find, you know, silver coins on some ship right now, it's going to be, you know, spot price of silver at least, you know. But they do manipulate the price of gold and silver, though, by these electronic traded funds, ETFs, right? So they could have 1 ounce of real gold and sell 100 ounces of paper gold. Right. So that's how they suppress gold and silver prices.
Right, so they're keeping them down, even though they're really expensive now. Like, I don't know what an ounce of gold is right now. It's
$1,760 today, I think it went down a little bit. And so $26 silver.
But it's another example show of the power of the fiat currency, centralized power. So it's outside of the individual's power, but the government power to really manipulate pricing at whim without really the public having any recourse. There's no legislative recourse. It's out of our hands. It's just another example of centralized power that's out of the hands of the actual individual person, American citizen.
Yeah, but it's actually centralized power that's above government. So the people controlling the government, they're the government people. And so really it's the bankers and the people issuing these ETFs that are suppressing the prices of gold and silver. But what I think is ultimately going to happen is that we'll be forced to go back to gold and silver, and then, because that's what usually happens after a currency collapses. People want gold and silver or barter items. They won't accept the paper. You're going to take $83 trillion for, you know, a jug of milk. You know?
Right. I mean, we cannot sustain this. Everybody knows it cannot be sustained. And other countries have been through hyperinflation. Germany, you talk about Germany in your book, Zimbabwe. And it's just a disaster. They have to restart on something with a foundation. And so we're going to either have a reset or whatever they call it, or something. It's going to be a massive change. And I hope people are anticipating that coming down the pike, and sooner than later, really, because I don't think I don't know how much longer they can just keep printing money for another decade or two, maybe. What are your thoughts
on that? They're already seeing inflation heat up, and I don't see how they're going to stop that. I mean, unless it's doing their taxation, that's the only thing I can think of, because they're not talking about raising rates. Well, Powell did say he was thinking about raising interest rates about a week or two ago, and the stock market took a hit, and then he backed off of it again. So,
interesting times.
Yeah, this great reset, you know, where they're trying to get everybody into the digital money, you know, no, the cashless economy, and force everybody to have the digital currency where they can track everything, and that might be a way for them to avoid this this calamity of hyperinflation.
But it's their digital currency, right? Not the cryptos that are supposedly decentralized, which are a response to this kind of fake economy, right? So that's why people really started the cryptocurrencies in the context of this craziness, that's this kind of the central banks that run at least the U.S., right? I mean, what are your thoughts in the context of the cryptos in this?
It's possible that cryptos were started as a way to get people used to this digital currency. I'm not a big fan. You know, I think that people are putting money into that, which can disappear and they're not going to have anything to show for it when it all goes down. But they won't have any gold or silver or ammo or weapons. They're just going to have some like fake money in an account somewhere that they may or may not have access to. So that's another issue. So,
I mean, what if the government puts its thumb down on them? What if these traders are prevented? There's all kinds of problems with that. It's relying upon a functioning electronic system and internet. What if that gets taken down? You never really know how the turn, you know, who's gonna turn the screws, so to speak.
Yeah, there are a lot of risks with crypto. You know, China is cracking down on it, but then El Salvador is gonna start using Bitcoin for their currency as an alternative currency, like national. But Russia is cracking down on Bitcoin and cryptos. And but like you said, you know, if the grid goes down, you're not going to be able to access it. You won't have anything to show for it. It can get hacked. Oh, there was just a thing in South Africa recently where, was it Afro Crypto, whatever it was called, right? The owners, they've disappeared with $3 billion worth of cryptos, and they said they got hacked, but they never reported a hack. So there's some pretty angry.
And some of those, that's not the first story of those, a massive amount of crypto disappearing in some of these other guys' hands. So
exactly. So it's not regulated, which, you know, has its risks, right? Because you're not going to be able to get that money back. And if you even just simply lose your key, you're not going to be able to get access to it. They're not going to help you recover it. Like if you have your bank account, you lose your login information, they'll help you get into your account. But
there's a lot of problems there. I'm surprised that there's so many sophisticated people putting all of their eggs in that.
Yeah.
The thing is that's a competitor to this system. So I'm sure that there's going to be attempts to really... or a corral that, you know, put that thing in a certain place, or with a competitor, like a world currency or something like that. So what do you see is going to happen in the future with our situation, considering the den of vipers and the fake economy?
Yeah. Well, I do suspect that there will be hyperinflation, and they will probably use that as an excuse to go on to the one world currency, because don't forget, the bigger picture is the one world government, New World Order. So everything is kind of marching towards that in lockstep, right, to the one world government. And, you know, like in 1982, there was a cover of, I think it was Forbes magazine, and they showed a picture of a phoenix of this world currency coming out of the ashes of hyperinflationary currency. And they're predicting this one world currency out of a hyperinflation. So maybe that's what we're heading towards. And, you know, people have talked about, well, is it going to be the Amero? Is it going to be the SDR? What is this global currency going to be?
We kind of already have it. You talk about the Bank of International Settlements, which is really that's the central bank of the central banks. Mm-hmm. So if they make that decision at some point, if there's some kind of order out of chaos event and they try to institute that and try to get people on board, like the euro, I mean, they succeeded in putting the euro together. So there is the potential of a transnational global currency. And they're probably these crooks are probably trying to angle that. Like, can you imagine these guys? They just took over the U.S. with this, but can you imagine some of these crooks wanting to have the biggest pie in the world, which is the world?
Well, now that we have the Biden regime, they're totally on board with the New World Order and the globalists, so they won't put up any resistance. They're helping it. You know,
Biden's made New World Order speeches. He said we're moving towards a new world. Back when he was actually kind of semi-cogent, which he's not now, he was making that. I mean, It's incredible. And that may have been the whole thing behind the stolen election, is to implement these financial things. They're definitely implementing just insane cultural stuff, but this is the other thing. I mean, can you imagine like an illegitimate government trying to put into a new currency or something like that? People would just go apoplectic. I don't know how. Yeah, I mean, they say 55% of the country wants audits, but the other 45% must just be complete idiots or dumb or not paying attention. Like, wouldn't you want all of your votes audited? That would be 100%, just like the auditing the Fed. Like, 100% of the population should be behind auditing the Fed.
The book I'm working on now is about the color revolution they just staged.
Do you mind talking about the color revolutions before 2020? Because I don't even know the American public knows that much about those revolutions. There's a whole list of them.
Yeah. I mean, Ukraine, the Orange Revolution is a famous one. And basically, it's just when it's a coup, okay? But it's not as overt as, you know, rolling tanks down the street. It's a combination of rioting and protests, or peaceful protests, right, and the stolen election. Or it doesn't have to be stolen. It can just be a questioned election. So, you know, I think they tried to do a color revolution with Trump in the 2016 election, but it didn't really work. But you can see how they tried, right? They say, oh, Russian collusion, Russian interference, not a legitimate election. And then they tried to get their riots going, but, you know, they didn't really get the riots that they wanted until 2020. So it basically, when they combined that, but it say that Trump had won. He did win, of course, and they stole it, but just say that they hadn't managed to steal it. And Trump won. Well, then they would have just ramped up their riots, right, and pressured. We don't believe the election results, and they would have forced a new election, or they would have, you know, well, that's cheated. What they did in Ukraine. They forced a new election, and then there was a change of government, and it could have been a completely legitimate election originally, but that's not the point. The point is to change the leader, and they don't do it by violent means.
Right. But these, like, there's color. I can't remember all the list of the color revolutions that have taken place. I think one was in somewhere North Africa. But those are things where they have a whole suite of tools they're using, and then get the other person in power. But this one was obvious cheat. There's massive fraud. And you can tell they know they're afraid about the Arizona audit, because all these, I mean, they dusted off Al Gore to BS the people. They're really heavily propagandizing against anything that comes out of that. So when that comes out, we're in it for interesting times, man. It's going to be really crazy.
We're actually anticipating a false flag as a distraction from the audit when the audit results come out, because I mean, it could be BS. It could say, oh, it was completely legitimate. I'm not going to believe that. But
oh, there's obvious evidence of collusion. They all shut down. Those six states all shut down in the middle of the night. That should be enough right there. That's evidence. And they should have asked the question is, how did you all shut down at the same time?
That's like Bolivia stuff.
Yeah, right. Bolivia, Venezuela. They pulled all those. They pulled that in Venezuela. So it's kind of a left-wing technique. It's so crazy. And even the response of Trump was just like.
It was weak. I was so disappointed, honestly.
What are you thinking? Who's surrounding you? What's wrong with you? Dumb.
You know, I was expecting a three-prong counter coup, right? I was expecting, okay, the audits, okay, fine, recounts, the going to court, okay, fine. But I was expecting a little bit more, like, response. But he just kind of
it was very strange, almost like they wore him down and he was done. Like, I don't know who people he surrounded himself with. I guess
That was one mistake, that he did not clear out all of those Obama plants. Because, you know, Andrew Jackson came in, he got rid of all of the pro-central bank people. He got rid of like 2,000 people in the federal government. That's what Trump should have done. See, yeah. Trump tries to model himself after Andrew Jackson, but I don't think he has Jackson's cojones. Sorry, but
Jackson was incredible, man. I mean, you look at his story, but they called him Old Hickory. Guy walked around with a bullet behind his heart. They couldn't get it out of it. So
that's right. He had I don't know how many duels he was in. They had this one duel, and then the other guy shot first, and then Andrew Jackson shot and killed the guy. And then he realized, oh, I've been shot. It's like he didn't even know this.
Well, he used to go into the duels with heavy clothes. That guy who he shot was supposed to be an expert marksman. And he actually was an expert, but he misguided it because Jackson was wearing a thick coat. So he actually was on target. He just couldn't gauge it right because of what Jackson was wearing. So, yeah, but that guy, they don't make them here. I mean, it's really kind of a larger issue about the American people, but they don't make people like Lincoln, Jackson, and Washington.
Jefferson.
Sadly, they don't make them like that anymore.
I watched a D'Souza video the other day on the Founding Fathers, and he was saying that back then to get into King's College, which is now Columbia University, you had to be able to translate Latin into English and Greek into Latin.
Right.
Just to go to the college, not that you learned it in college. And how many people would be able to do that now?
Look at what Hamilton was doing when he was in his teens. Just incredible stuff. It's super intelligent. Much harder workers than the lazy asses today.
Thomas Jefferson, he predicted exactly what was going to happen with the central bank. Well, he could see it from back then, what would be happening now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Just hyperinflation, centralization. Really what it is it takes the power out of the people. When it's centralized and they're inflating and deflating at will, we're serfs. We are economic serfs, and it cannot be. People should not see that any other way. Maybe there's people on top, and there's not that many, because the average person, if that poll is correct, 40 to 50% of the people in the United States cannot take a $400 or $500 charge, additional charge to their finances.
Yeah.
So we have allowed this to happen, and everybody should be ashamed. All Americans should be ashamed.
Yeah. See, Jefferson said, if you let the central bankers in, our children would grow up and be homeless on the continent that their forefathers conquered.
Yeah, and that's where we're at now.
Happened. Yeah. I mean, a land of plenty but they've stripped the wealth out of it. Basically, it's gone into the international banks, basically. So, yeah, I mean, so the tools that the central bank has basically is to inflate and deflate, raise interest rates, lower interest rates. That's it. That's all they can do. But right now, they can't raise interest rates. So they can't actually improve the situation at all. I think they're good for nothing. I think we should just go back to free market, gold and silver.
I think so. And it puts power back into the hands of the people. It's really about people power. They're allowed to do stuff. There's not a lot of inside scams they can pull if everybody's working around in gold and silver and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, Cynthia, we are at 50 minutes. Is there anything that you would like to add? Anything I missed? Where can people buy the book before we wrap this up?
Okay, well, Den of Vipers is on Amazon, and I know some people do not want to support Amazon, and that's fine. So they can get the book through me if they like. My website is cynthiahodges.com. My email is syn@cynthiahodges.com. And I'm happy to just mail it out to you. So thank you, William, for having
you.
Me.
And let me just get your email up there. www. No, then people can have it. I can put it in the show notes, actually. cynthiahodges.com.
Yes, right? cynthiahodges.com.
Okay, so is that right there? Do you see that on the screen?
www. Yes, that's right.
Dot. All right, cool.
With the dot, yeah.
Sorry, I was trying to type.
That's okay. People are savvy enough to know.
I'll put it in the show notes too. I was trying to be sharp. I was too slow. Again, the book, great conversation. Book again, title is Den of Vipers, Central Banks and the Fake Economy by Cynthia F. Hodges. Cynthia, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.